We welcome back to the show from News Center Maine, Pat Callahan. Pat, good afternoon.
Hi, Rich. Clearly, it's time to turn on the Wayback Machine again.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Absolutely. Yeah, we wanted to go back about 50 years, Pat, which I know is hard because, well, you weren't even born yet.
Yeah, let's go with that.
We're looking back all this year at 1968, and before we talk specifics, certainly one of the most traumatic years in American history.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I was a 11, turned 12 years old that year. And, that was in the day when if a special bulletin came on TV, you knew something bad happened. Not like today with cable news where everything's an alert and breaking and all that. But, I mean, there was a lot of bad stuff going on. And, when you're that age, you start to wonder, is this how it all ends? And, when it came, you had the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy and the riots at the Democratic Convention, and Soviets invading Czechoslovakia and, so many bad things. You recall the 1968 was saved by Apollo 8 at the end of the year, showing us that, yes, we're all on the same planet here. For the first time, human beings saw the Earth from beyond, from that far out.
Well, it was a very interesting year politically. And think back to Maine in 1968. We were in the midst of a resurgence in Maine in many ways for the Democratic Party with a young governor in Ken Curtis, people like Peter Kairos, Bill Hathaway, and, of course, Ed Muskie, Margaret Chase Smith, the only congressional representative from the Republican side from Maine.
That's true. And it hadn't been that long, only about 14 years since Ed Muskie had become governor and really gave rebirth, if you will, to the Democratic Party in Maine. So it didn't take long for the Democrats to really kind of seize the day. And, of course, Ed Muskie was becoming a nationally known figure.
And part of that was because of the work that he did on a fairly obscure Senate subcommittee that people thought was sort of the end of the line. But he made the most of it with his really groundbreaking work on environmental legislation.
Right. He was on the Public Works Committee. In fact, he was there kind of as punishment. He had stood up early on to Senate Majority Leader Lyndon Johnson. When he first came to the Senate, he said Johnson sat him down and explained to him how things work. It's tough when you've been a governor and now you got to learn the rules of the Senate and so forth. And then he also made a pitch to him. And while he was explaining the rules, Johnson said to Muskie, says, there'll be times you won't know how to vote till they get to the M's in the roll call. And then Johnson made a pitch for a rules change that he wanted about filibusters, and Muskie said, I didn't approve of it, but I wasn't going to tell him that. So when he said, well, Ed, you don't have much to say. And Muskie said to him, well, Lyndon, you haven't gotten to the M's yet. And Johnson wouldn't talk to him for 6 months after that, according to Muskie. So, and he wouldn't let him have the committee assignments he wanted. So that's how he ended up on Public Works. And you're right. He turned that into something, helped create the environmental movement in Washington, just as it was becoming a national priority around the world. And, of course, the Androscoggin River was one of the 10 dirtiest rivers in this country. And Ed Muskie knew that, having grown up in Rumford, and he was prepared to do something about it.
So we get to the summer of 1968 and that very violent convention in Chicago. How did Ed Muskie position himself to be considered for the number two spot on the ticket?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. It was because, as you recall, among the people running that year early in the campaign, when Lyndon Johnson got out, Eugene McCarthy was in and Robert Kennedy was in. Hubert Humphrey was considered the president's heir apparent, but there was a lot of trouble on the left. Ed Muskie supported Hubert Humphrey. Bill Hathaway, the other Democratic senator, and Governor Ken Curtis both supported Bobby Kennedy. So when they were planning for Maine's state convention to choose delegates to the national convention, Muskie and one of his top aides, George Mitchell, decided that what they would do is have a favorite son candidacy for Ed Muskie to avoid splintering the delegation and diluting whatever clout Maine would have at the national convention. That meant Muskie would essentially be a placeholder candidate. He wasn't actually running for president. And when it came time to go to the convention, he would release his delegates to vote for whomever they felt was in the best position to help the state of Maine. And in fact, according to George Mitchell, years ago, he told me, they said that was part of our plan, was to try to position Ed Muskie to be Humphrey's vice presidential running mate. And that's exactly what happened.
And as it turned out, it came down ultimately to a choice for the Humphrey campaign between Ed Muskie and Fred Harris of Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly what Humphrey's final reasoning was, other than, according to Walter Mondale, who was former vice president, been a senator from Minnesota, he thinks Humphrey had Muskie in mind all along. He respected him, liked working with him. Their styles couldn't have been more different. Ed Muskie was He was judicious about everything, and he takes everything slowly. And Muskie would talk a mile a minute, and it's bam, let's go, let's get something done. But he felt that they meshed pretty well. And it turned out to be a great choice for Humphrey. In fact, Muskie told the story years ago about how he knew it was down to himself and Senator Fred Harris of Oklahoma. And Humphrey comes into his office, or his hotel room, I guess, and with Fred Harris, and said, I want you to meet the man who's going to nominate you for vice president. And that's how he told Muskie that he was the guy.
And Muskie ended up giving a tremendous speech at the convention that really fired up the delegates.
Yeah, and they needed something to be excited about, and it was really the kickoff to an important campaign. Muskie said that that 1968 campaign for vice president was the most liberating political experience he ever had, traveling the country, talking about the issues that were important to him. And he came upon a method that the media seized on. You know, candidates, presidential candidates in particular, were always being heckled in those days, mostly by young people who were unhappy with the status quo. And so Muskie, early on in the campaign for vice president, he's out giving a speech at a college, and he's being heckled, and he just stands there and waited. And he says, my patience outlasted theirs. And they said, aren't you going to say something? And Muskie said, well, I will when you give me a chance. And the student said, well, that's the problem. You can speak and we can't. He said, well, come up here. And he let him speak. And he said, the young man didn't have much imagination because after about 3 minutes, he was out of things to say. And then I got to have my say. And he said, the media thought that was wonderful. He said, no, so we used that method again because there were often hecklers around. He said, it didn't always work, but it worked frequently enough that it was a good way of showing that, yes, we're open to your ideas, but here's why. You know, here's what we think. And he said at that particular one, he got a big ovation from all the students after treating the heckler that way.
We're talking with Pat Callahan here on Downtown. Well, Muskie not only went after the Nixon campaign, but also was very strong in his criticism of George Wallace, who was running as a third party candidate that year.
He was indeed. You know, and that, of course, was a problem for the Democrats. There were a lot of Southern Democrats who might have defected to George Wallace, may well have affected the outcome of the presidential election. So Muskie made no bones about the fact that he felt that George Wallace's style of politics did not fit in with the American ideal. And Muskie did so well out on the campaign trail that the campaign, much more than in most other campaigns you ever see, really featured him in advertising. There's a famous campaign ad that shows the names Edmund Muskie and Spiro Agnew over an EKG monitor.
Oh, yeah, the heartbeat, said, the heartbeat ad.
Who do you want to be a heartbeat away from the presidency? And that's all they had to say. People understood vice president matters. And there was a famous political cartoon around sometime during that campaign as it played out. It showed the two presidential candidates running in a foot race, but you see Nixon carrying Spiro Agnew over his shoulder, and it's Muskie carrying Hubert Humphrey in his arms as they race for the finish line. And, you know, so Muskie clearly had a big boost on that campaign. And Ed Muskie told us years ago that he said they felt, even though Humphrey was in a hole because he couldn't really separate himself from Lyndon Johnson's policies on the Vietnam War, that they were getting momentum. And they said they had the last day of the campaign, they had a big ticker tape parade in Los Angeles. He said, we're riding in the car. We're talking about picking cabinet members. We felt the momentum was with us and we were going to win it. And, of course, as you know, it came out, they had a narrow loss. Richard Nixon squeaked by, and there you go. It was they gave it their shot. Many people felt if that campaign lasted a week longer, the outcome may have been different.
And, of course, the strong showing on the campaign trail positioned Edmund Muskie to be the front runner moving ahead toward the 1972 race.
Yeah, and, of course, the first thing that had to happen, though, Muskie had decided that he did want to take a run for president himself if he could. But he knew in 68 that it would be Ted Kennedy's nomination next time if he wanted it, until the summer of 1969 with the Chappaquiddick incident, and Kennedy was now no longer a factor. Suddenly the polls show Ed Muskie was going to be the front runner for Democrats in 72. Now that's heady stuff, and they began working on a campaign pretty quickly, but you know it's difficult to be the front runner for too long. Because then everybody else is taking aim at you. And as we later learned, and it was probably evident at the time as well, but the fact is Richard Nixon did not want to run against Edmund Muskie. He felt he was too strong. They wanted the Democrats to nominate a weaker candidate. And so the Dirty Tricks Squad went to work. And we all know some of the things they pulled on Muskie over time and finally provoked him into showing a little too much emotion in the snows outside the Manchester Union Leader in 1972. And And there you go. The big, strong man has a weakness. And suddenly, in those days, men weren't supposed to cry in public, I guess. And people believed he had. He was angry about what was said about his wife. And there you go. The history has changed.
And Ed Muskie, I think in an interview with you many years ago, said that maintained that was just the melting snow. People interpreted it differently. And I always thought it was very ironic that 20 years later, Bill Clinton, when running for the Democratic nomination, went on 60 Minutes with Hillary and broke down talking about rumors about his infidelities. And that in many ways may have contributed to his ability to win the nomination just 20 years later.
Things had changed, and part of it may have been, I think Ronald Reagan had an ability to show manly emotion, you know, get a little teary-eyed at the right moment. I'm not saying it was insincere, but only that suddenly it seemed more acceptable, and people's thinking had changed. But, you know, one of the things that Ed Muskie always maintained, you're right, is that he was not crying, but he admits he was overly emotional, and he shouldn't have gone to make that speech about the publisher of the newspaper. His aides tried to stop him, and he wouldn't listen. And it became clear that it was a very bad tactic to take. And, who knows? You never know how these things play out, whether he would have won the nomination or not. But he certainly was seen as the strongest candidate. And he would have, you know, look, I don't know that anyone could have beaten Richard Nixon in 1972. So he may not have been any different at all. But the fact that Muskie was denied that nomination, at least in part by some dirty tricks from the Nixon campaign, is certainly an interesting part of history.
And Muskie carried some of that bitterness with him, even into the mid-70s when he had a chance again and was considered as a running mate for Jimmy Carter in 76.
Yeah, and I think he'd, I suspect he would have taken it had it been offered. And obviously Carter liked and admired Ed Muskie because he then later chose him as his Secretary of State once Cy Vance had to resign over the Iranian hostage crisis and the failed rescue mission. So that gave Muskie kind of a way to cap his career by leaving the Senate and going into to become the Secretary of State, ultimately not for very long because Carter didn't win re-election. But I felt, when I remember talking with him after that, and you know, he was at peace with the whole thing, though he always said, he spent about 35 years in public service, having been in the legislature and governor and up through being Secretary of State. He said, I don't regret a minute of that. He said, those were the great years.
I also learned something that I've carried with me for, I don't know, 25, 30 years, and I learned it from a special you did on Muskie, the great connection with the University of Maine, that his debate coach at Stevens High in Rumford was longtime Maine football coach Walter Abbott's mother.
That's right, Lucille Abbott. And they actually used her in some campaign spots in the 1968 campaign, I think it was, as they were introducing Ed Muskie to the world. Because a lot of people didn't know who he was, and you're right. They featured her talking about what a smart student he was, and I don't remember exactly what she said now. It's so long ago, but that's true. I remember the last public appearance I remember him making. I think it was the 1992 Democratic Convention, and Ed Muskie was there to speak, and they introduced him, and of course they said Ed Muskie, the man from Maine. And he always enjoyed that kind of introduction, but he said, I like to think of myself not as from Maine, but of Maine. And it's an important distinction in the minds of many.
Pat Callahan, great to hear your stories and your reminiscences and your incredible knowledge of Ed Muskie and that 1968 campaign. Pat, as always, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Rich.